Good morning. We'll call the September 17th, 2013 Sussex County Council meeting to order. First thing, be approve the agenda. Mr. Lawson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. Good morning. One amendment to today's agenda. We can strike approval of the minutes.
Entertain a motion to approve the agenda as amended.
I'll make it.
Motion, Mrs. Deaver. Second, Mr. Phillips. Any questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Correspondence, Mr. Moore.
Yes, Mr. President, I have one letter. Dear caring friends, thank you so much for partnering with us at the 5th Annual Crab Feast and Watermelon Extravaganza. Your generosity helps us carry on the rehabilitation and care programs that have given so many men and families a renewed hope. We look forward to seeing you again next year. Best regards, Bob Kerr, Executive Director, Delmarva Teen Challenge. That is all.
Any correspondence from council? Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. First item of business today is a presentation by Frank Piorco, Division Director of Denerec's Division of Watershed Stewardship. Mr. Piorco is here to discuss revisions to the Delaware Sediment and Stormwater Regulations. He's got a presentation which we have provided slides and printout for you on the dais. There's copies of the public in the back as well. Mr. Piorco, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Hey, good morning.
County Administrator Lawson, President Vincent, members of the council, Sussex County staff and guests, thank you for allowing us an opportunity to spend a few minutes with you this morning to talk about two items briefly. One will be the implementation of the revisions to the state sediment stormwater regulations, and then I hope to talk for a moment or two about some of the floodplain program updates that will also have an effect on interaction with FEMA, the county, and the state. So just to kind of frame a little bit the state revisions to the sediment stormwater regulations, I want to talk mostly about the implementation process, but just to give you a sense of this has been a process that's been undertaken in earnest over the last 6 or 7 years. And we have involved a advisory committee meeting as well as technical subcommittee in hundreds of meetings, as well as developing an interested parties list for communication. We have received and addressed 700 comments prior to the public notice, which we've tracked in a database, and we've also provided responses. And we've also, following the first public notice period, addressed an additional 200 comments on the regulation language received and considered, an additional 300 plus comments on the technical document. The regulations have been promulgated. We anticipate an effective date of January 1. Full disclosure, we have a legal challenge to the revisions to the sediment stormwater regulations, which we won't be at liberty to discuss today. But to give you an idea of the scope of the regulation revisions, we're not changing the level of activity which will trigger requirements under these regulations. There are no new groups to be regulated. And the modified compliance requirements really deal with post-construction stormwater runoff for small and larger storm events. The important thing I hope that folks are interested in is what impact this may have to the overall plan review and recordation process at a county or local level. And we hope that that's minimized by having most of that kind of separated from local land use approval deadlines and really at the local level at the Sussex Conservation District as far as plan submittals. We have a grandfathering provision in place which simply stated that if there are plans already in a review queue at a local level, and Jim Elliott is here from the Sussex Conservation District, as well as, I should point out, Mike Powell, our floodplain manager, and Brooks Cahall, our drainage program manager. So if things get too tough as far as questions, I can punt to them. So we're really looking at providing an 18-month grandfathering window for plans that are already at local review, and we'd like to see those plans approved by July 1, 2015, if they're going to be approved under the current regulations. For approved projects, they have 6 years to commence construction. That's really 2-3 year cycles. And we're anticipating construction would start no later than January 1st, 2020, if they're going to be constructing under the existing regulations. And when we talk about commencing of construction to be grandfathered under the current regulations, we're not just talking about getting out and moving some dirt. We expect that commencement of construction means significant infrastructure started by that date in order to qualify under the existing regulations. So earth moving alone won't get that deadline for you. There's also an opportunity for, we understand that there are many plans and interim phases of inactivity. So along with the Conservation District, we've looked at an opportunity for saying to folks, whether your plans have been expired or not, whether you're under construction or not, under the current regulations, you can resubmit your plans for reapproval prior to January 1st, 2014. And the Conservation District is reaching out to landowners right now that have projects in that interim stage, notifying owners and consultants of that. Quickly, compliance criteria for new development that's different is that under the current regulations, we've got four regulatory storm events. We're combining two of the smaller events into a one-year storm event that we're managing a little bit differently. We really are trying to promote runoff reduction. That is reducing the amount of runoff that occurs at the source rather than relying on the traditional collect and convey methodologies for stormwater. And we're also looking at an opportunity for our larger flood events, our 10-year and 100-year storms statewide, to not go back and look at how they compared to the existing 10 and 100-year storm events, but to allow folks to analyze their storm discharges based on what the downstream conditions can assimilate, whether it's the stream, downstream landowners. And the key for us is really for no adverse impact. So it's a bit more technical for the engineering community to take a look at how large storm events affect the watershed rather than just comparing them to a pre-development condition. But we think we're going to, in the long term, really make a difference in downstream flooding by taking a look at how a project in a certain portion of the watershed behaves compared to how water is flowing in the rest of that watershed. I know it's a little bit in the weeds technically, but it's cumulative, and it really takes into account the position of a land development project in a watershed relative to the rest of the watershed, not treating them all equally. One of the other things in the stormwater area that I'll touch on for a moment is that realizing that there are opportunities for doing something other than the small storm management on site, we have developed an offset process for projects that either aren't able to meet all the technical requirements for that small storm on site, and you know they run the gamut from allowing folks to consider trading or banking or offsite mitigation, and we've also developed a fee in lieu option in the regulations. And again, I don't want to spend too much time talking about the technical elements of this, but we kind of worked this process out with the Committee of 100 and the Home Builders Association to try and get closer to what happens if we can't actually get what your requirements require on the ground in a cost-effective manner is an alternative for us. And what we came up with is, yes, there are some alternatives that that can be done in addition or in lieu of doing something at every location on the ground. So again, we'll have some very intensive training with the engineering and development community in Sussex County. Jim and his folks, along with our state staff, will be working with engineers and consultants, as well as having local government training and outreach this fall, so that everybody understands where we're heading with the regulations. So we hope by January that we'll all be on the same page. So I don't know whether you want to talk for a few minutes about SB 64 and the floodplain process, or you want me to entertain questions relative to the stormwater regulations. How about if I just go through this for a few minutes and then we can
that'd be fine.
Ask questions. Thank you. Senate Bill 64 culminated in a committee to discuss statewide floodplain and drainage issues. Back in August of 2011, we had seven very robust meetings and developed a report to the General Assembly about the state of floodplain management and drainage throughout the state. We had committee representation of a diverse committee comprised of these organizations and individuals, and a process that began with a committee working to look at minimum standards. These are not regulatory requirements. These are not mandatory requirements. These are minimum standards that we went through a process where we thought that the report generated developed recommended standards that we asked local communities to comment on. Communities commented back on how difficult or important that they thought these minimum standards would be into their local programs. We got that feedback. We put that into our draft report. The report went to the General Assembly in March of 2013. I think that what's critically important from this point forward with respect to local governments is how this information is going to be utilized locally. And converging with the culmination of this report is also some new federal requirements from FEMA as a result of a statewide mapping update that FEMA is going to require local governments look at their ordinance and code language and make some modifications to those. So in anticipation of that, I know that our folks have already been working with your technical staff, with Mr. Lawson and his folks and folks at FEMA to have these conversations, to talk about what this means at the local level, who can provide what levels of assistance. And we're going to be meeting with every town and municipality in the state in the next 12 months or so to talk about their specific ordinance code languages, what's necessary to be changed from FEMA's standpoint that would be mandatory, and what recommendations we'll continue to make for improvements that we think we'd like to see at a local level that are not mandatory, that towns and municipalities are welcome to consider, and we can discuss those as well. So that's kind of a short introduction to the process that I think we see moving forward with floodplain management at the local level. Certainly it's going to be one that engages the counties and municipalities with FEMA and with our state resources, and it's going to mean a few meetings. It's going to mean an opportunity for us to get together and talk about what we're doing at the local level, and there'll be some changes that will be required to your local ordinances, which we'll help you with, and there'll be some recommendations, as I said, that won't be mandatory. So that's kind of what we've got teed up on the floodplain side, as well as we will keep informing communities about some drainage code standards, which we're also recommending that are, again, non-mandatory, but they came out of this committee report, and we'll be continuing to have those conversations as well. So with that, I will open it up to questions that I can
questions
help
of council.
You with.
I heard you say drainage code standards. Would you say that again, that last sentence you talked about?
As
drainage code standards.
As part of this report, the committee came up with some recommendations for drainage standards as well. And we're also putting those into language that could be code friendly if someone decided that they wanted to implement those standards
as
well.
I understand. Thank you.
Mr. President?
Yes, sir. Mr. Phillips.
With respect to the stormwater, is there like a technical document that's
Yes, sir.
Available?
Yes, there's a companion document to the regulations, which is a technical document, which really encompasses our erosion sediment control standards and specifications and all of the stormwater technical standards and specifications to accompany the regulations. And it is voluminous in terms of it's complete. Let's put it that way. And something that we've, if you recall the numbers of meetings we had with the Regulatory Advisory Committee versus the numbers of meetings we had with the Technical Advisory Committee, there were far more meetings held with the Technical Advisory Committee with the engineers and the folks that are helping us through this process and making sure they understand that they're going to have to be the ones designing and understanding our requirements. So there was a lot of emphasis placed on the technical requirements as well as the technical document.
Where would that technical document be found?
It's on our website.
Has that been registered with the Register of Regulations?
No, it's not. It's not part of our regulations that was promulgated.
Will it be registered with the...
I don't want to go too much further into that because that has to do with some of the challenges that we're looking at right now with the reg challenge. So I have to be a little bit vague with that, not to be disrespectful, but we do have a legal challenge pending, and I have to be respectful of that.
Well, this is a regulation, is it not?
It is. Yes, sir.
And all regulations have to be registered?
The regulation is registered in the Register of Regulations, yes, sir.
But you say it has not, as of yet, been turned over to Mr. Jeff Hayden?
The regulations have, yes, sir.
The technical document?
The technical document is not.
Okay.
How would this have any force of law if it has not been turned over to
That's him? An area that I'm really not going to comment on.
I didn't hear the answer.
I'm not commenting on that question as far as how the technical document has or doesn't have a force of law. We consider it to be a technical companion to the regulations.
It's just out of your expertise, you're saying, basically. I mean, you're not an attorney, so you, right? Is it a question, a legal question, right, is what they just asked?
It's been a legal question posed to us.
Right, right. And you're not the person to answer those kind of
Correct.
Questions, right? Is that basically what you're saying?
Well, you said earlier it wasn't going to be mandatory. Now you said it is regulated, so I don't know which side I'm on here. You said these would not be mandatory, and then you went ahead and said it was.
Now, we were speaking about some of the floodplain language and some of the drainage code language, which is recommendations that came forth from a committee whose recommendations are strictly voluntary.
Okay.
That's different than our previous discussion on the stormwater regulations.
All right. Let's go down to something down level playing here, common sense that I can understand. What would you recommend this house that you got a picture of here to prevent from having that water in their front yard?
Which picture? On the top?
The top picture. Yes. How could they not have that water in their front yard? What do you recommend for them to do that they'll not have that water in that front yard?
Councilman, I don't have the context of how that particular lot was.
Well, you're showing that picture as a model,
mm-hmm.
and as a model, then we should know all about that house. Or not just show the public, oh, we got water and don't know what we're going to do about it.
There are lots of reasons why we have isolated flooding for individual homes like this.
I understand
this.
That, but I want to know what we're going to do about that particular house. Why is that water in that yard? What is it? Why is there? And what are we going to do not to have that water in that yard? I mean, we're not going to prevent rain, right? 10-inch rains or whatever.
Not.
So what are we
going
to do?
We can be smarter about where we site individual homes in areas that we know to be low-lying and have okay. existing drainage problems.
Right. I see your answer. You're saying recommend them. They shouldn't have built that house to start with there.
That might be a recommendation.
And
which is
eliminate that problem, they should move
legit.
That house. Pardon?
No, I said that's probably legit, that houses shouldn't be built in some of these areas. Now, the key is, I think, would be on a house like that from that picture is we may not be able to prevent that from happening, but what we want it to do is leave that property faster than or sometimes right now it's not leaving at all. Is there a way that we can get that water to move on and not remain?
And that's
part
of
the drainage part, right?
That's also part of the equation. You're absolutely right.
Right.
Part of what we are faced with in some situations is that we have individuals that for one reason or another, either intentionally or not, block natural drainage ways. And in some local jurisdictions, Sussex being one of them, we don't currently have a solution to enforcing that individual or individuals to remove that blockage, intentional or otherwise. It could be causing a problem very similar to what you might see in that house up there. It just could be that somebody took 10 wheelbarrows full of dirt and dumped them in a ditch.
And you can't do anything about that, is what you're saying? There's
not,
no regulation?
We don't have a current enforcement mechanism currently. Unless it's in a tax ditch. If it was generally just a natural conveyance area, then that wouldn't have the same enforcement capabilities as a tax ditch. That's
I have a little issue that bothers me. That is that folks, builders or whatever, bring in a lot of fill, stack it up real high, and they build on a higher level than the land was originally, than other other lots, you know, drain other homes and businesses drain that, you know, surrounding them. How would that be affected? Is that going to continue? Do you know? Is there anything that the state has looked at? I mean, because it just goes on and on. And
there are some recommendations in this document and in this report, and some recommendations that we hope to discuss further with local governments that speaks to elevation of grading from one lot to another.
Right.
That speaks to the need to consider how water flows off one home to another when developments and neighborhoods are built out, you know, one or several lots at a time, and they're not all under the auspices of the same developer. So, and it's not a situation that's unique to Sussex County. There are many jurisdictions throughout the state that have a limited lines and grades requirement or limited topographic requirements for doing spot elevations from one house to another or making that part of a building permit process. These are some of the recommendations that that did come forth out of the committee.
Is that in, you're talking about, that's been addressed in this?
It's been addressed in this as a recommendation. But I think as folks are all aware, it's all about the degrees of requirements that are cost drivers for the cost of a home. And this was in, you know, a full conversation we had with the group that, you know, on a continuum, there are requirements which say that, you know, you can't elevate your home fill elevation to the detriment or adverse impact of a neighbor. On the other side of the continuum, there are requirements in some jurisdictions in the state which require a full-blown as-built survey of each lot, you know, that are constructed so that there's an actual survey which demonstrates that that no adverse impact is taken care of. Those come at some expense. That is not a cheap process to have that kind of elevation survey done after a home is built to see that there's an individual compliance to an on lot lines and grades. And the folks in Newcastle County will tell you it's not an inexpensive proposition. With development there and their codes there, that's what they've chosen to do as a measure to ensure that each individual lot is accounted for. So, you know, all we're
how
saying
far, how far do they go? How right. wide do they go? I mean, that is. Yeah, it's very complicated.
I think reflective and reported is a recommendation that, you know, that this be considered with some, you know, range of, you know, how it can be considered. Everything from, as I said, a spot elevation to determine that, you know, this is an acceptable elevation to, you know, the other end of the spectrum, which is full-blown lines and grades.
Well, you talked about some remedies, and I may have misunderstood what they were. There was some trading or something. It looked like remedies when all else failed. I'm not sure if I understood what you said about that for the person whose home was flooded because of something like this. What is there anything new on that horizon? Because those folks are going to be in a position, probably not going to be in a position to hire a big lawyer and to sue. I mean, so is there any thought about that? Any remedies? Anything in here?
Well, and I'll give some deference to our local conservation district here and our local governments as well.
What you're referring to, I wanted to clear it up.
For every major problem that was brought to your attention that you hear about, there are probably nine others that have been solved by having somebody go out into the field, either from the conservation district or a local building inspector, and talk to whoever's building the home and say, you know, is it possible for you to bring a swale over here to, you know, help this drainage out here, or have you considered, you know, working to make the water go this way? And, you know, as I said, you know, nine out of our 10 problems that you don't hear about as elected officials are solved that way. Mm-hmm. There are some, unfortunately, some the one out of 10 that's not able to be solved like that seems to be the ones that garner our attention and take up the most time in responding to these kinds of concerns and are usually the ones most severely impacted.
Mm-hmm. But there's not been any new ideas on that situation.
Well, we've got a few recommendations. As mm-hmm. I said, the drainage standards and recommendations in the report are, you know, they're only a handful, but we think they're important enough to have some further conversation on.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Phillips.
I can't help but notice coming over from Laurel on Route 9, the new construction at Sussex Tech, there is this huge stormwater management pond out by the road. Is that being constructed under these new regulations?
No, it's not. It's being constructed under the existing regulations. And I've had the same conversation with Senator Venables about that particular area, and I've told him that I would look at that a little bit more and get back to him as well on that, because he had the same
Much larger than the one just across the road?
I don't know the specific details on that, Councilman, other than I haven't investigated it fully, that there is the elimination of one pond over at the school that would necessitate having to provide for that storage on the other side of the road. And I don't know what the pond that you're referencing is designed to accept in terms of new development. So, but I will find that out, and when I get a complete answer on that, I'll make sure that I respond back to you accordingly. Also.
And just so I'm clear, the technical document, which is a part of these regulations, is on your website?
I didn't say that the technical document was part of the regulations. It's a technical document that's the companion document to the regulations. The regulations are not the technical document.
Okay.
It's on our website.
And it's on the website.
I'd be happy to forward you the link.
But you have no intention of registering that with the Registrar of Regulations.
Again, I'll defer that to a future conversation, but I'd be happy to provide you a link to the technical document if you would like.
I mean, it is a regulation. I mean, it does govern how properties will be regulated by the government, correct?
That's your interpretation, sir. I'm not going to get any further into that conversation today for reasons I've talked about.
Technical document is voluminous.
Very large.
Very large. And we are the 49th state in the country with economic growth. Do you think that voluminous document is going to help us get out of this
not over
bump
here
we're in?
We're not the 49th.
I'm not qualified to comment on that.
Any else from council?
Yeah,
Cole.
I got a couple questions. On my way over here, I got a phone call. Somebody saw this on the agenda. So Bay City, which has been a problem, and basic conversation went back and forth with this lady, and she kept pointing out to me that a comment she kept hearing when she would complain to, I guess, Conservation District was that they would point back to the county to get it fixed. And I've heard that a number of times. That a lot of times people call over there and complain and say, oh, it's a county. What I'm trying to find out is is there some expectation from the Conservation District staffing here in Sussex County that we should be doing something that we're not?
I don't share that expectation that's shared by the writer of that letter.
But I've heard that a number of times from people that they somehow get referred back, oh, it's the county's fault, and I'm just trying to figure out what is it do they think we should be doing.
Bay City Mobile Home Park is a privately owned business that leases lots where, you know, in my opinion, since the creation of the mobile home park predated any state stormwater requirements, if there are concerns that impact the folks that are leasing those lots, some of that responsibility, in my opinion, is incumbent upon the individual who owns the business to ameliorate those concerns.
I don't disagree with you.
That's what it usually is.
I also, over the years, familiar with issues like subdivisions that are completely controlled by the developer, like Americana Bayside or something. It's all developer controlled, and then when they get their plans approved, it's easy for them to follow those plans. And then there's subdivisions that where they just put the lots on the market. Any builder can come in, and so individual contractors are involved, and the developers basically sitting in the back seat a little bit. What has happened is when they put in driveways and different things, the drainage system that was approved 10 years down the road, nobody knows, nobody looks at it, they just put in a driveway. Should there be some follow-up inspections, or should there be, I mean, to correct this problem, because that's where some of these cul-de-sacs are getting water in them because people aren't following the plan. Is there a way we can connect the dots that where maybe, I don't like this, but should an individual property owner in these planned communities that have, you know, drainage plans be required as opposed to maybe somebody who lives somewhere that's not under a drainage plan? But if I live in a community that has a drainage plan, somebody should be
I don't care how many years go by, come back and make sure that my driveway and that culvert is at the right elevation, the water will flow downstream or something.
Is there a miss utility that's going to overlook all that?
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying, is that something that anybody's ever discussed or thought that maybe it's a way to fix it? Because I know people like Sam don't want any more regulations, and I don't hate to put a burden on individual property owners, but when you're in a subdivision like a, and I'm just talking about my area, a salt pond, which is I'm very familiar with, you know, they're still building houses. A guy will come in and do the driveway, and another guy will be building a house, another guy will be doing this. So that's where I think there's a disconnect. And is there a way to fix that somehow?
I agree with your assessment and your characterization. Certainly when there are multiple individuals working within the same community, it's more difficult to control, manage than when you have one builder or developer. We do, however, still have the responsibility of the individuals developing the community when it comes to things such as infrastructure that they put in, whether it be stormwater facilities, the elevation of catch basins and storm drain pipes. Those things should be looked at and checked at the inception of the infrastructure, the development. And again, if they're subject to change, and typically, you know, your pipes and catch basin systems, if they're put in according to the plans, you know, in year two, you know, those elevations aren't going to change. But if those catch basins and pipes are half full of sediment, you know, 8 years down the road, you know, again, this is why, you know, those permits that govern how the responsibilities are metered out to the development community are still in effect until that community is built out on the stormwater side. Right. Well, so, but that doesn't get at your point, which is very good one.
I'm just wondering, could regulations, mm-hmm. could people sit down and say, maybe let's look at regulations, but let's target communities. In other words, if I use, again, a bear trap, which is the developers can complete control, maybe there's no need to do it there because they're following the plans, or at least they're supposed to be, right? But then you take a subdivision like a salt pond, which, you know, everything's happening individually. It's scattered all over. Like maybe just those subdivisions should be required. And maybe you could somehow go through a list. I mean, there is a list of subdivisions everybody could provide. And it's fairly obvious, you know, what type of subdivision is being constructed and by who and all this other stuff. So, I mean, that would be an easy fix and at least somebody would be following up as each individual house is being built to make sure things work.
And I think in the context
is it Ocean Farms, Mike, where we had a lot of West Ocean Farms, again, there's another place where cul-de-sacs got flooded because I guess once the original plan was developed, it was a good plan, but then over the years, nobody ever came back to make sure anybody did it right. And that, because they fall under the 5,000 square feet or something, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But maybe there's an area that would fix a lot of problems. I don't know.
And I'm
just a thought.
Certainly open to the conversation with your folks in the conservation mm-hmm. district and us as to how we can get maybe to a, you know, a finer scale on finding solutions for some of these issues that are not, you know, cost busters for.
And here's another observation I've made over a few years. A lot of people say the county ought to get in the stormwater business, and then but the state has been delegated that authority, right? So I keep thinking, why do we, you know, reinvent the wheel or make duplicate services and stuff like this? Is there a staffing problem with soil conservation out here and being able to keep up with the issue of stormwater? I mean, is there somebody would maybe say that they're
Well, we can't go on the property and enforce anything.
No, I'm just saying, is there
when
are you keeping up? Are you trying to keep up? I mean, how are things there in stormwater?
I think things are.
Please state your name.
My name is Jim Elliott.
Okay.
I'm an assistant program manager, plan reviewer for the Sussex Conservation District. I think right now we're handling things.
Because development's slow.
Yeah, yes. Development has slowed. Now it's starting to seem to be picking up a little bit more, but I think right now we seem to be managing fairly well.
Back when we had a lot of development, how would you assess that situation?
Well, we also had two more inspectors and we had two more reviewers, okay. So we were staffed up.
You were staffed
to mm-hmm. satisfy that load
for the surge.
But mm-hmm. as development tapered off and the economy tanked.
But for you all to do, like I was just suggesting, maybe to go to some of these older subdivisions or as something gets approved, you know, with follow-up inspections and stuff to go back and see how these things are working. You wouldn't have staffing to do that problem.
As far as like a maintenance inspection, right now we kind of handle things on a complaint-driven basis.
But we do too.
And we don't have the staff to go around and look for problems.
Oh, I know.
As far as West Ocean Farms, I think that predated stormwater, so really that I don't believe was in our jurisdiction from the district perspective, from a stormwater perspective. We'll go out and help those individuals as best we can, but we don't necessarily have the plans on file for that stuff.
Right.
And it really is a stormwater regulatory program responsibility versus drainage issues, and that's a whole other conversation. We have, you know, 17 people in our Georgetown office that deal with nothing but tax ditches and drainage. And, you know, on any given day with a 5-inch rain, we could easily use, you know, 19 more. So yes, it's very event-driven, but it's also in understanding the nuances between what we can affect with a regulatory solution within the bounds of what we have in statute.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Maybe a regulatory solution is to identify the communities that have a plan, but it's scattered developers, scattered contractors, et cetera, going in versus the guy who's in complete control of it and should be following that. And then each time a culvert or drainage, I've seen in Salt Pond, for instance, some guy comes out his driveway and just has a little swale. Another guy has got a culvert. I mean, it's all over the place because there's nobody, they don't have to get any permit for that. Right?
Miss Utility.
Not from the district, no, right, or right. The county. I know DelDOT, if you're putting an entrance in on DelDOT Road, you have
No, I'm talking about within the subdivision. That's where we're getting a lot of the issues.
I mean, I don't know if that would be something the county or Public Works would want to pick up as an entrance permit. Make these people get an entrance permit and the county go out and tell them what they have to do.
That could be a solution to looking at it.
That may be.
But I'd love to see a conversation on how we get down to these within these subdivisions where we're having problem every time we have a major rain. And it's not so much that I don't expect to stop the flooding, but sometimes the flooding just stays there day after day after day. What we want to do is see that flooding ease off within a timely
Absolutely
manner.
Absolutely correct. And sometimes it's as little as the elevation of a driveway culvert being set.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
And where I worked in Cecil County, Maryland many, many years ago, their solution was that the county installed driveway pipes through a contractor.
Mm-hmm.
And it was part of their road contract. And when you build a lot, if you were a builder, you put a stake in the middle of where you wanted your driveway set, and the county's contractor came in.
Well, I wouldn't mind seeing maybe like our engineering department and our roads people talk, you know, maybe work this out. Maybe there is a solution. I mean, there's got to be. Other people have probably got this similar problem, and maybe we could address it.
We'd be happy to talk further on that.
Any more questions of council?
My biggest thought is I don't think we're going to get rid of the water problem, the drainage problem, by using holes to ground. And we call them stormwater holes, or whatever you want to call it. I think the direction to take is more ditching. If you want to get rid of the water around that house, you're going to have some ditch. You're not going to go to his backyard and dig a hole in the backyard and hope that water runs in there. Because when he digs that hole, that water, the spring is already up, and the hole's already going to be full. It's going to be loaded from the springs. Your water has nowhere to go anyhow. So it's foolishness to think that you go out here and dig a giant hole, which I showed to soil conservation. Some members saw it. I had a neighbor that dug a hole, was big enough to put this building in three times deeper. That thing was 30 feet wide. It was over an acre big. Sits up on Wilson Hill, actually. It's one of the biggest, highest spots and second highest spots, elevations in Sussex County. What happened when we had this 10-inch rain? The springs came up. The hole filled full. The springs got so high that it actually ran over and ran into my park and flooded me out. Instead of having that much ground there as a sponge helped hold the water, we created a bigger problem. So it's not the stormwater ponds is ridiculous. It's crazy. We should go towards putting more drainage.
Well,
we got
to
drain.
Doesn't the pond lead to a ditch once it gets to a certain point? And
this pond did not have no ditch anywhere near there.
All right. Well,
and we're digging holes out in no. Now you take Sussex Tech out here. Does it have a pond, a ditch, drainage ditch behind that pond?
I believe there's a tax ditch on both sides of the road that it discharges to.
Well, if that thing has a ditch on the other side, it didn't need a pond to start with. It could have went right on down the ditch and quit wasting land, acres of land, digging holes in the ground that don't amount to nothing. It really amounts to nothing. That's my problem. I'm not against regular. I'm a tax ditch manager. I know a lot about ditches. I've been in ditch business for 30, 40 years, and I see the value of ditches. I know ditches are important. You can't have drainage without ditches. But I never got anywhere digging holes, big holes in the ground, thinking that you're going to get rid of water. That is the silliest idea that this state has ever come up with. Anybody ever sits up here don't know the practicability of how water operates. They don't realize as the ground gets wetter, the higher the springs comes up. When the springs start coming up, and it just floods over and floods anything around it. It's just silliness. That's my idea of storm water ponds.
Any more questions of council?
No, I'm not going to ask any more. It's been enough.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, council.
Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Lawson?
Okay, thank you, Mr. President. Next item of business is the administrator's report for September 17, 2013. Item number one, attached, please find the call statistics for the fire and ambulance call board for August 2013. There were 10,873 total calls handled in the month of August. Of those 911 calls, 79% were from wireless phones. Item number two, per the attached engineering department fact sheet, Hopkins Pettijohn subdivision, otherwise known as Red Mill Pond North, phase two reached substantial completion effective September 11, 2013. And item number three, the Delaware Department of Transportation will hold public hearings this week for the U.S. 113 North-South study for the Millsboro South area. This section of the project encompasses more than 14 miles of U.S. 113 and includes the towns of Millsboro, Dagsboro, Frankfort, and Selbyville. On Wednesday, September 18th, the first hearing will be held at the Millsboro Civic Center, and on Thursday, September 19th, the second hearing will be held at the Selbyville Fire Hall. Each event will be held in two parts, beginning at 4 p.m. From 4 to 6, the public will review maps of the alternate routes, interact with DelDOT officials, and provide private testimony to a stenographer. From 6 to 8 p.m., the public will be permitted to provide public testimony for those who wish to speak. All comments are due on these projects to DelDOT by Friday, October 4th, 2013. All comments are due to DelDOT on these proposals by Friday, October 4th, 2013. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir. John Ashman.
Hey, good morning. I have two items on my agenda this morning. The first is the expansion of the Miller Creek Sanitary Sewer District. I'm here to request permission to prepare and post notices for what we're calling the Easter expansion of the Miller Creek Sanitary Sewer District. The area includes parcel 134-19-7503, a property owned by Thomas and Megan Easter. The parcel is located on the north side of Double Bridges Road, County Road 363, and the Baltimore 100. The expansion is based on a written request from the landowners citing a failing on-site system as their reason for the request. The property is able to gain sewer service by extending sewer lines from a connection point in Malcolm's Manor through an easement from the adjacent property owner, and the Easters have discussed this with the property owner here and have verbal approval to put the easement in, and I believe they're working on the documentation now. Parcel consists of 1.46 acres, more or less, and the owners will be subject to a system connection charge of $5,248 per EDU based on July 1, 2013 through June 30th.
You have a motion, sir?
Didn't you have two of those, John? I thought you had one on Old Laning Road in Warrington.
That's next.
Okay, I just want to make sure that's Chuck. I didn't recognize those names as owners. Hey, thank you for your help there.
Not a problem. Be it moved by Sussex County Council that the Sussex County Engineering Department is authorized to prepare and post notices for the extension of the Miller Creek Sanitary Sewer District to include parcel 134-1975.03, lands of Thomas and Megan R. Easter, as presented on September 17th, 2013.
Yes, so moved.
I'll make that.
Motion, Mr. Cole. Second, Mrs. Deaver. Yes. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I will yes. Motion carried. Next, sir. Mm-hmm.
Second one is a request for permission to prepare and post notices for Homestead B&B expansion of the West Rehoboth Sanitary Sewer District. The area includes parcel 334-12-121.01, a property owned by Mary Ford and Judy Hendrick. The parcel is located on Warrington Road. Located on Warrington Road and Old Landing Road, is being operated as Homestead Bed and Breakfast. The expansion is based on a written request from landowners stating that they have recently found out their current cesspool is operating as a non-conforming system per DENREC, and the parcel cannot be sold as is. The property is able to gain sewer service by connecting to an existing lateral previously placed on the property right-of-way line. The parcel consists of approximately 2 acres, and the property owners will be subject to system connection charges of $4,822 per EDU based on current rates, and the property will need to be assessed for its current EDU allocation.
Mm-hmm. Motion, sir.
I do. Be it moved by Sussex County Council that the Sussex County Engineering Department is authorized to prepare and post notices for the extension of the West Rehoboth Sanitary Sewer District to include parcel 334-12-121.01, lands of Judith K. Hendrick and Mary J. Ford, as presented on September 17, 2013.
I'll make a motion.
Motion, Mrs. Deaver.
Second.
Second, Mr. Cole. Any questions on the motion?
The only question I have, I don't know if it's Deaver. Really on the motion or not, is that I know that they found out about this after the contract of sale was signed, and kind of a backdoor situation. Was there anything that the county could do to help in any way? I mean, I know we it was 30 days and 60 days minimum, I think, you know, on our part. But
yeah, we have to get the posting and through the public hearing to make sure.
Yeah, there's nothing
they can
we can
be
do.
Extended into the district. I don't think we can connect them until there's an until they're
right.
Approved and in
there's
the
nothing and nothing DENREC could have done
no,
to
an ordinance.
give them a hand there because it was they had actually
come down, sir, please.
They had actually sold it and didn't, you know, it didn't settle. But.
Good morning. Michael Izzo, County Engineer. We knew that there was a request for a district expansion. I wasn't aware of any emergency situation.
Oh.
I have taken action in a similar case in the past, and we'll look into it, and we'll have to report back, because it's the first I've heard about that this morning.
Oh, you're a great guy. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, appreciate
it. I don't know that we considered it sort of that emergency situation where it was just related on the fact that they were trying to sell the property. It
no,
wasn't
they
that
haven't.
They were coming telling us that there was overflow in their yard or anything like that.
No, but they have that buyer, and I think they thought it was a done deal, and they found out about this. DENREC wouldn't
approve it. It's the definition of emergency.
And, and we should not guarantee service in the position.
Once we start we set a precedent. So.
Yeah, I mean, if they have a cesspool and people are living there, then that's obviously we'll override any bureaucratic process and
okay.
try to make it right.
So,
we'll look
you.
Into it.
Any more
thank
questions
so
on the
much.
Motion? We'll take a vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I will yes. Motion carried. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Hicken?
Good morning.
Morning.
Just one item this morning. That's the extension of our lease with LifeNet out at the airport. LifeNet's the medical helicopter company that operates out there. This would be the second of two possible 3-year extensions on their lease. They've been out there since 2007. They provide about 15 to 20 jobs at the airport, and they're paying a decent amount of rent. So they'd like to stay, and they need your approval. Unless you have any questions.
Have a motion.
And just a reminder, the lease is in the name of Air Methods Corporation, which is their parent company.
Mm-hmm.
Be it moved that the Sussex County Council approve the second extension to the lease agreement with Air Methods Corporation for Lot A2 at the Sussex County Airport, dated 5 September 2007.
So moved.
Second. Motion, Mr. Cole. Second, Mr. Wilson.
I have a question. Did I hear you say at the same rate, higher
no,
rate?
No, actually, the rent goes up 3%.
Okay.
So right now it's $18,000 something. It'll
okay.
go up to over $19,000.
Mm-hmm. That's what I think.
Any
you.
More questions? We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I will yes. Motion carried. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Jones, come on down.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Morning.
The item I got on the agenda is to present the balance and change order and substantial completion for the concrete apron repairs phase one project, which was contract number 1228, constructed by Minton Construction. The balance and change order adjusts the contract to final quantities The contract was awarded for $69,750, and this change order reduced the amount by $10,052.05 to a final cost of $59,697.95. Basically, the reduction was I had three contingent items in case I found poor soils, an undercut, fill, and an extra concrete item. The job started on July 15th and was complete on August 12th of this year.
Any questions?
Yes, sir. Be it moved based upon the recommendation of the Sussex County Engineering Department that the balance and change order for Sussex County contract number 12-28, concrete apron repairs, phase one, with Minton Construction Company be approved, which decreases the contract by the amount of $10,052.05 for a new contract total of $59,697.95. Substantial completion is granted effective August 12, 2013, and that final payment be made and any held retainage be released in accordance to the terms and conditions of the contract documents.
Entertain a motion?
So
moved. Motion, Mr. Phillips. Second. Second, Mr. Wilson. Any questions on the motion?
Just to say, it sounds like a very conservative way to handle it, to provide for possible problems in that number, and then come back and take the number off. Very good. Good news. Thank you.
Take the vote, Mr. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
Well, yes, motion carried. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Jennings, grant requests.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. President, members of council. I have two grants for your consideration. The first one is Georgetown Little League. They're requesting a contribution to help offset the cost of each player of the Georgetown Millsboro Big League receiving a ring and a jacket to signify their hard work in becoming the Big League World Series champions. The last grant received was $1,000 from Mr. Wilson for operating expenses.
Could I suggest that all council members participate in this? This group of kids won the World Series, representing really all of Sussex County. And did they have any particular number that they thought?
We called them, and there's 15 players, and the estimate is to be $9,100.
Would everybody?
I have a question about the ring.
If we did 500 each, would that cause everybody to have heartburn?
Well, I have a question about it.
Deaver.
This is not football. I mean, I know that they won and it's wonderful, but the ring, I guess it kind of bothers me. Is that something that is traditional that the county pays for?
We have in the past.
Pay for a ring.
Rings and jackets.
Well, we're not paying for it. We're helping.
No, we're
subsidizing what they're doing there, I guess, the rings and jackets. So,
okay. Well, I know what happened to my rings when high school rings, they're gone for good. But okay,
it's
we'll
a
buy.
Pretty big deal. I'll make the motion for 500 each. I don't know if I'll get the votes, but
also
this is for wasn't there, are there girls on this team from all over the county?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's correct. Is that correct?
They're from Laurel,
aren't they? There's some
from Cape. There was a girl from Cape, some from Woodbridge, some from Georgetown, Millsboro.
You went down and stood with them, remember that?
Yeah, no, I you know, Sam, I'm getting old, Sam. I forget now. Getting old.
My point is, Mr. Phillips wants to give $2,500, is that correct?
Yep.
Would this not qualify to come out of the new category we created this year in the budget for countywide sports activities?
Countywide youth activities,
yeah,
yes.
That's a good one.
Would that not, Mrs. Jennings?
It can, yes.
Would you make your motion to take out that fund?
So moved.
That's a good idea. Mike, that's why you get that.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. That's why he's president.
Second that motion. They say you don't have any money. I know you have. Okay.
That's why he's so tall, too.
We have a motion from Mr. Phillips, second Mr. Wilson, to grant
$2,500. I didn't know there was a category.
Yeah,
there's a slush funds everywhere.
There's no slush fund. It was in the budget you read and approved.
Category you would give.
Taxpayer money.
Out of that fund for countywide youth activities for sports.
Good idea.
Question on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
Okay. The next grant is the Apple Scrapple Festival. They're requesting financial support for their annual festival in Bridgeville. The festival promotes awareness of agriculture in Delaware, fosters intergenerational activities, and brings tourism to western Sussex County. The last grant received was $1,500, $500 each from Mr. Vincent, Mr. Wilson, and Mr. Phillips.
Joe Conaway's asking.
I'll second that motion.
We haven't got a motion yet.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Phillips, second. Mr. Cole, to grant $1,500 to Apple Scrabble for festival expenses, with $500 coming from Mr. Phillips' account, my account, and Mr. Wilson's account of taxpayer dollars.
Mm-hmm, right.
Any questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Well, yes, motion carried. Mr. Moore, proposed zoning ordinances?
There are none, Mr. President.
Mr. Guy, anybody signed up here to additional business brought before council?
I got a comment I might want to make here.
You want to make a comment, George?
I got a comment.
Did you
Dan
sign up?
Dan Kramer.
You didn't sign up.
He's only got a minute. A minute left. He took so long walking.
My name is Dan Kramer. You guys sure missed the boat when the guy from Denrec was running his mouth. What does it say? Revisions of Delaware sediment and stormwater regulations. It has nothing to do with water running off. They do not want water running off on land. You are required to keep the water on the land, because if you don't, it causes pollution. Well, get a life, because that's what they want to do with your home over there. They want everybody to have, and if you don't think so, you guys just spent over $100,000 at the Greenwood Library to keep the water from running off, because it goes into underneath the hole. Am I correct? Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
You're correct.
I got just a suggestion, just a thought, and it follows up on that stormwater presentation we had and that revisions and all that stuff. Is there any possibility, and I maybe Mike and Todd think about this, that we can look at flagging maybe subdivisions that with a known history of water problems, and then directing them to soil conservation before, you know, if we see a building permit come in one of these communities we know or have a history of it, is there any possibility we could start a database flagging these and then maybe direct them out there to make sure that things are done properly so we see some drainage?
Well, work. We know Zora anyway, States is...
Is it up
yeah.
to Mike?
Yeah.
Mr. Rizzo, come forward, please, there, my friend.
Michael Rizzo again. I think we would be, because the Sussex Conservation District is the entity that regulates stormwater in the county, they receive the bulk of these complaints. I think they would have to funnel them to the county, and then we would have to react to that. But I guess it would be legal to do that type of thing, but...
Again, it's just a way to get ahead of it.
Can you treat one subdivision different than you treat another subdivision would be my question.
There's a difficulty with that, and that would be something, and follow up on what you suggested, George, maybe it's something for future agenda item. I know I've got more than one client that when they do a subdivision, they make each lot owner put money in escrow, and after their driveway goes in and the home is built, they go out and inspect to make sure that the right. drainage pipe was put in correctly so it's not to ruin the swales. And if it was done correctly, the money goes back to the owner, and if it's not, the developer uses that money to correct the problem.
Well, like I think there's some simple fixes we could look at and start helping with this problem, but right. if we don't do anything, we're just going to be right. talking about it every year. So
maybe Mr. Lawson, it's this, you've heard the conversation.
Yeah.
Maybe had that conversation with engineering, with planning yeah. and zoning, with
Mr.
soil conservation, with whoever, and maybe come back with some
yeah.
thoughts.
Kind of wondering, you know, how we
whatever.
Could prevent another trail at Beaver Creek situation. That was very bad.
I'm going to sum this up real quick. My father was born in 1897.
Mine too.
Before all these smart engineers came along, he said, if you want to buy a piece of property and you're worrying about the water, go buy it after a big rain. And I recommend maybe this county should pass a law for George that nobody can go out and buy property until after a big rain. That'll take care of all these problems.
And basements or no basements? Got to have basements.
Entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll
entertain it.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Wilson, second, Mr. Phillips.
Sam, you are entertainment.
Question on a motion. We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson. I'll vote yes, motion carried.
Yeah.